You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Good afternoon. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, almost our culture, current events, our Catholic faith stuff that we talked about. Catholic things. Trying to change it to that. Just because not everything we talk about is faith-oriented. It is. It's all kind of encompassing, but it's more lifestyle. Catholic life. So, trying to do it right looks like being in the culture, right? It looks like just being out there doing what you're doing with an ethic, ideally. That's the goal. That's the idea. Lots of things to talk about this afternoon. Former President George W. Bush talking about the dangers of isolationism, and I think we have to talk about this in connection to what solidarity should look like and what we really need to understand in that respect. Also, at least one committee member on the council, I guess, for abuse survivors saying it's not happening. It's not working the way she thought it was going to be. She's leaving that, as they say, death by committee, even at the Vatican. We'll get into that. And then art imitating life again with Disney now perhaps going a little more overtly gay. We've seen references. We've seen innuendo. We've seen suggestions that perhaps characters might have homosexual inclination. More of that in the new Beauty and the Beast, apparently. We'll get into that discussion as well. All of that and more. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour. Back after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good afternoon, we're back. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour. Culture, current events, Catholic themes. We do that every afternoon. Don't know what's happening in the Jeff Sessions world right now. Didn't post this over on Facebook. A lot to talk about. Apparently a couple of meetings with the Russian ambassador, then denials of talking to Russia. And, you know, I read this huge piece from The New Yorker about the history of the Russian involvement and the Russian mindset, the Putin mindset. But going back to Boris Yeltsin and kind of what was happening at the time under all the way back to the Clinton administration, when NATO was basically right up against the doors of Russia after the disbanding USSR, and where Putin was in this dynamic of being a KGB operative and seeing a lot of Western culture. He was working out of Germany at the time, and just a lot of as this kind of circles around, and whether or not, who knows? I think at this point we got still have more questions than answers, even after a really beautifully written, well-researched piece from The New Yorker. I still think that we don't know. We don't know what exactly is happening here. But basically, their paper trail, breadcrumb, whatever trail to truth in this is that essentially, looking at the evidence, looking at the trajectory, Putin basically wanted to discredit Clinton because of what happened under the Clinton administration to Russia. And again, NATO at their door, almost maybe discussing joining NATO. That didn't happen. And then other countries close by just kind of seemed to be. And then even, and I didn't realize this was something that Obama had said. I know that he was good at kind of jabbing, like basically calling ISIS the JV League. Now, he did that not because he thought they were dangerous. He did that to basically say, yeah, whatever, right? Not that they didn't need to be dealt with, but he wanted to kind of make them not think they were our central focus, which is kind of where we are now. That kind of looks like they may be getting the status that they want when you put them in that type of crosshairs. Obama was not willing to do that, and he was like, what JV League? Well, apparently he did that to Russia as well. And he said, yeah, they might have a regional influence, but not really a global leader, right? So he had discredited Putin as well, with Secretary of State Clinton in the mix. And then the whole uranium, they don't go into this in the article, but the uranium deal was not a negotiation with Russia. It was a negotiation with a business deal that just happened to have controlling stock from Russia that the Secretary of State had to be a part of because of the connection to the U.S. We don't know that story. There's a lot of stories we don't know. We don't know the story on Benghazi. We don't know the arms trade deal that went bad and why these guys were revolting. It had nothing to do with September 11th. It had nothing to do with Muslim radicalism. It was an arms deal where insurgents didn't get what they thought that they were going to get, and they attacked the embassy. I mean, that's what happens. We see that kind of stuff. We were out there dealing in areas that we didn't necessarily need to be dealing with, kind of like Fast and Furious that came and went. We didn't even know what was happening. We were arming Mexican border insurgency to somehow fight drug cartels. That's not the way we do things. Well, we don't have, I mean, at least maybe I only know the ones that went bad. Maybe I don't know enough about the really good stories on that front. I'm not aware of them. Generally, when you just hand something off to someone and hope for the best, that's all you're doing. You're hoping for the best without some real guidance, some real directive. It kind of just becomes a big question that may or may not work and probably is going to end bad and who knows what. So through all of this, the Putin thing may have just been that. It could have just been, let's wreak havoc on the Democrats because we hate Bill Clinton. I mean, it really could have been. And Obama's not been any friend of ours either. Who knows? I don't know. Time will tell, and this Jeff Sessions thing is getting very interesting when it comes to his involvement, at least his discussions that are documented now, that there were at least a couple of conversations with the Russian ambassador during the campaign. And what is that? Did that have influence? Was there something that potentially happened during those conversations that could have caused Russia to do some things that either they were or weren't planning on doing? I don't know. Right, we're at this point a lot more questions than answers. But now Sessions apparently sitting on that committee, the Judiciary Committee, to look at the Russian involvement. At least some other senators are saying, no, he does not need to be here because he was involved. So very, very strange dynamics that are happening. And I think that this is kind of sort of what happens at any transition. There's always upheaval. There's always challenges. Again, it's been 8 years since we've seen anything of this nature, right? Second term presidency, you don't have these type of challenges. 8 years is a long enough time for us to forget a lot of stuff. Even the stuff that we think we remember, we obviously are selective in that. So again, where this goes, I'm not sure we know. I don't think we have a clue. But I do know this, if it leads to more nationalism and isolationism, George W. Bush, U.S. News and World Report story that I put on my Facebook page, this is bad. This is bad. Because ultimately, especially in the ethic of Catholic understanding, we have to have an openness to internationalism, to solidarity, that says, yes, do what you have to do at home. Absolutely. Without question. Do what you have to do at home. But do not let that be the only thing you do, right? Do not let that be all. We don't say we're walling ourselves up in some sort of compound and forget about the rest of the world. Some do. They do that. That's not the way we're supposed to live our faith or live our lives. but rather to say, let's see what we can do to help those who are out there globally, internationally. If we have resourcing, if we have know-how, if we have opportunity, and we just keep it for ourselves, that's not the way it works. It's like charisms, right? We talk about charismatic Catholics, charismatic faithful people, those who may have some sort of giftedness that can appear as gifts of healing, or most popularly, gifts of tongues, praying in tongues, things of this nature. That's not to be celebrated and worshiped and kind of reveled in. It's not to be like, okay, isn't this cool? Aren't we having fun with this? It's supposed to be, how do you use that? How do you make the best use of that to get out into the world with those gifts to make a difference? And this is true of anything. It's true of our government. It's true of our life. It's true of our understanding of who we are and what we can offer. If we get that part right, if we say, okay, it's not just here, but it's everywhere, right? It's the local and the global. It's the internal and the external. It's the yin and the yang, if you will, right? It's this whole big picture of understanding how this works. It's the black and the white, right? The black and the white make a lot of gray. It's generally not this so completely definitive, it's here or there. No, it's both and. And that both and oftentimes is both more challenging and more rewarding, right? But I think that that's something we got to understand. There's reward to the challenge. Always reward to the challenge. And even if there's defeat, there's the satisfaction of knowing that the challenge was at least met with the best capacity that you have. I mean, I'm not a sports guy. I get sports. I do. I understand them. I'm not one of those guys like, well, what are they doing with that? I get the rules. I know how it works. I can get very wrapped up in sports, no doubt. I don't watch it because of that, because I have at times in my life gotten wrapped up in it. So I avoid it because I know it's intoxicating. It can be very intoxicating to the point that all you want to do is follow this team to the point that you have to stop everything else is on hold. No, we got to do this. And so for me, I avoid that. I just have always decided I'm going to delineate. And it doesn't mean that I don't hate sports. I think they're great. I think there's something. It's almost like they're too good, if that makes sense. But at the same time, the sports analogies are always true. And there are always those who win and always those who lose in every sporting match. But the effort to try to get there is always worth it in whichever way that is. Now, in sports, there's always the next time. Right? Well, there's always the next game. There's always the next season. There's always the next, whatever. Unless you're just a losing coach and you finally get canned. Then maybe you have to find another career. But through it all, it still comes down to the effort that we have to put in. That effort for us cannot be isolated. That effort always has to be in complete solidarity. More to come. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Leo Brown, Leo Brown Almost Hour, back after this.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Culture, current events, Catholic things. We talk about that every afternoon for 50 minutes. Thank you for being here. Beauty and the Beast. I don't know if you've seen the previews. What movie do we see? Woman, Ronald Blank. We saw a movie recently with the kids. It was a kids' movie, and we went to see it. Batman. That's right, of course. Lego Batman. So we go see Lego Batman, and there are previews, of course, for all of the upcoming movies. And here's the live-action CG'd all of the characters in Beauty and the Beast, which looks spectacular. I mean, it really, really looks fantastic. I mean, it's amazingly well done. It's obviously the classic story in even a more, you know, if you've seen the stage version, almost a stage version-like, except not costumes, all CG'd and cool, just cool. I mean, regardless of whether you're a Disney fan or a Beauty and the Beast fan or a Disney princess fan, whatever it may be, which I am, a Disney princess fan, just so you know. If there's interest in this, it looks great. I mean, it looks like it really, really could be good. Now, I posted this over on my Facebook page looking like there's at least a scene with, and I don't know the name, Gaston, I know he's the antagonist. I don't really know the sidekick to Gaston, but apparently that's where it is. He's the guy who sings the song about Gaston, and then Gaston then begins to sing along, and that no one does all the stuff like Gaston. But he apparently has some sort of struggle with, I want to be like Gaston, I want to be Gaston, I want to kiss Gaston, apparently this comes out. Now, apparently Zootopia, and I don't recall this necessarily, had a couple of giraffes maybe that looked like they could be a couple. I don't remember that. I remember the effeminate leopard, right? I mean, the leopard seemed to be effeminate. There was that. Now, not that just because someone is effeminate that they're gay and or vice versa, right? Very macho masculine guys who I've known who don't lisp, who don't seem womanly at all, are as gay as a day is long. I've experienced that. So you never know. You never know about that. But interesting treatment of something that is undoubtedly cultural. Now, it's not cultural to the point that we pretend it is. But the question is, because something is in the minority, and the vast minority, less than 2% of the population, that's minority. That's vast minority. Does that mean that we simply say, oh, well, we just need to forget about it? Because also in the vast minority of the 2% are those who have real problems, like antisocial problems, perhaps psychopathic, sociopathic problems. Do we ignore that? No, we have to say, this is something we have to address. So, and I know you could easily criticize and say, Leo, you just put homosexuals in the same category as sociopaths and psychopaths. No, I put them in the category of minorities, of vast, vast minority. Personally, I'm in a vast minority, believe it or not, with the disease that I have, that I have to deal with dietetically, which is my celiac disease. I have to watch everything I eat, and I have to be careful about not consuming gluten, and I'm in the vast minority of less than 1%, right? But at the same time, you walk through a grocery store these days, praise God for this, you would think that 30% of the population suffers from gluten intolerance because there's so many gluten-free options. That's great. I appreciate that. But you know what? If nothing was ever created gluten-free, we would be fine. Celiac sufferers would be fine. Why? Because there's so much stuff that's inherently gluten-free. You don't need to cater to us. You don't need to market to us. And it's become this trend of now this is kind of the way things are because we've blown this one minority into something that does everyone need to change for me? I don't think so. I would never expect that. I don't think that because I have dietary restrictions that everybody else has to wade through the options of gluten-free stuff to get to what they want, that's crazy. So when we look at this in comparison to the cultural reaction to homosexuality, which certainly when you look at entertainment in general, especially when you look at television, my goodness, this is where you see a ridiculous disproportionality. And oftentimes in early times of television, this was because these characters were somewhat lampooned, right? Go all the way back to the 70s, right, with soap. Billy Crystal, a young Billy Crystal, as a gay ventriloquist in this TV show, he was just pretty much made fun of, right? That was the whole thing. He was the laughingstock. He was a kooky character. And I believe it's true, at least to my experience, no one does not know. I always get in trouble for these double negatives that I use. No one does not know someone within their sphere of connections who isn't gay. Everybody knows somebody who's gay, right? Everybody knows that. And these individuals are people we love, are people that we, I would hope, are people that we embrace for who they are, where they are, and we're not trying to pull them out of some sort of lifestyle. We're not trying to say you're bad, you're wrong, you're sinful, because we all know people who fall short of the glory of God and who even at their best fail 7 times a day, according to Scripture. You know, that's each of us. That's the best of us, right? That's those who are trying as hard as we possibly can to do everything right. We still get it wrong. So I think there's something to understand when we look at where is our self-righteousness on these issues? Because ultimately, we're all going to mess it up. We're all going to get it wrong. We're all going to, somewhere along the way, fall short. Some things look more obvious than others. And you can say, well, Leo, it doesn't need to be in this movie. Well, if it is in this movie, does that help or hurt? I think that's what we got to ask, right? Is human dignity upheld or degraded? Do we look at this in a, is it handled in a dignified fashion? Or is it handled in some sort of bizarre, lustful fashion? Or my guess is, honestly, if kids are watching this and a dude says, sometimes I want to kiss Gaston, they're going to laugh at it. It's going to be a comic moment. And is that dignified, right? So I don't know. I don't know enough about the context. I don't know enough about how this is going to be treated, handled, presented, for me to make a judgment on that without seeing it. I don't know. But that's where the question lies. Question can't come down to, is this right or is it wrong? Because there's so much grayness in the right and wrongness. But I think it's a little clearer line if we say, is this upholding human dignity or is this degrading human dignity? Because here's the thing, and I've watched this in my faith life. You may have a gay couple who is mistreated and made to be ostracized because of whatever they are wanting to see happen, whether it's their marriage recognized or a cake being baked, that turns into such a fiasco that their dignity is demeaned, right? Their dignity as human beings is compromised because of this episode. Now, regardless of where they were to begin with, is irrelevant to what we've created now. It's like Jesus with the woman caught in adultery. This scene that has erupted, this challenge that is in the hearts of those with stones in their hands, now is the thing, not the woman caught in adultery. Who is here to condemn you? Then I don't condemn you either, Jesus says. But Leo, he says, go and sin no more. Sure he does. Did she?
Or did she go right back to the arms of her whomever, lover, and on to another lover? We don't know. We don't know that story. Well, that was Mary Magdalene. We don't know that. We don't know that. Maybe it was, but I think evidence seems to indicate it wasn't her. More evidence. I used to believe that, and now I've come around to see that, I guess there's no real connection to that. What happened to that woman? We don't know. She may have gone back and gotten worse. We don't know. Because the lesson wasn't about her. The lesson was about those condemning her. But we still want to turn real. But Leo, I forgot how many times have I had a but Leo, right? But Leo, Jesus said to go and sin no more. He did. Yes, he's always going to say that. Does that mean people do that? Does that mean you do that? Do you do that? Because I don't, right? I go right back and sin. I try not to, for the most part. But as I've said before, there are things that we do that are tempting. And they're tempting not because they're not tempting, right? They're tempting because they're tempting. That's why we sin, okay? It's about us, our hearts, our reactions. More to come. We'll be back. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour, back after this.
You are listening to BreadBox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. BreadBox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Good afternoon. We're back. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown Almost Hour. Culture, current events, Catholic things we talk about. Pope Francis has been very outspoken when it comes to clergy abuse, healing those wounds, making those apologies, asking for forgiveness, all of the above. There is a pontifical commission for the protection of minors, and there is a woman who has been on that commission since 2014, Marie Collins of Ireland, a survivor of clergy sexual abuse, who has now stepped away. And she stepped away in a very public way, essentially citing that nothing is really getting done. Now, 2014 to 2017 may seem like a long time, but in the eyes of the church, it's really not. Now, at this point, not in any Catholic News Service article are the full dynamics of this, other than hearing her frustration with saying what the Holy Father wants to have happen, what the Curia wants doesn't seem to line up, and these things just don't seem to be getting implemented. Now, again, 2014 to 2017, a moment, a blink, not even a full blink, like the beginning of the eyelids moving of a blink of time when it comes to the church. I think we got to realize that. Now, I'm not saying this to be critical of her, but I'm just saying when we begin looking at corrections, implementations, new directions, you name it, my goodness, I mean, look at the Second Vatican Council. It was 5 years just to get through. Then after getting it with two popes, right? The Pope John the 23rd, who began it, didn't even finish it because he died before it was done. And then Pope Paul the 6th comes in and completes the council. Then we are still now, right, beginning to perhaps unpack the Second Vatican Council in its fullness. And the original response and the reaction was not implemented to the point of what was truly outlined in the council. So, you know, I think it's premature to say it's not happening, but I understand her frustration and I get that. And I'm not condemning her for a moment saying, you know, why did you step away? Here's the thing. I've done enough projects. I've done a zillion projects over the years. And I know how frustrating it can be when it looks like things aren't moving in the direction you want them to. I know that. And I know not everyone is equipped to tough that out. It's not easy. It is never easy to tough it out. So there's always going to be those who fall away and those who step away. This doesn't mean it's not working, right? And I think that that's the thing that I would hope that we understand through this. This council may be doing, may be doing everything it possibly can do within the confines of what they're working in to implement and correct and move forward. That's something I think we have to understand. But at the same time, there will always be those who can't tough anything out. And it's nothing against them. When I say that, it sounds like I'm being critical, and I don't mean to be. There are those who just aren't cut out for certain things. That's okay. And there are certain time frames you're like, okay, I've given it all I can, right? 3 years, I'm done. Again, 3 years is probably just getting the ship ready to get out of the slip, as I see it. It could take a while. I think that's important to remember, especially when you hear the words of our Holy Father talking about Jesus didn't just complete, it was not just one and done on the cross. And his life was not this, and this is on my Facebook page as well, talking about what this Lent needs to be for us. His life wasn't just so the rest of us can go about our business celebrating the fact that Easter's every Sunday, which we do. We do that, right? So don't get me wrong. There is a degree of that in every Mass, every Sunday Mass, every daily Mass, celebrating the resurrection, no doubt. But we can't just celebrate the resurrection without realizing that there is a continual crucifixion as well, right? That's what we miss out on, I think, too often. We make the assumption that now, through redemption, praise God, yes, redemption, we are kind of free and clear. And now it's all about the resurrection. No, we're missing two-thirds of this equation if that's where we are, because it's also about the life and the death leads to the resurrection. And that's secular as well, right? That's always going to come around. That's why we have a liturgical calendar. That's why we do the same-esque things every year. They're never the same twice because we're in a different place than where we were last year, but we move along this path toward redemption with a life, death, and resurrection mentality that says we're always going to be going through that process. And it's darn important that we allow that process to be redeemed. Because as St. Paul says, as you've heard me quote a zillion times, my favorite passage of all of Scripture, Colossians 1:24, in my suffering, I make up for what is lacking in the cross of Christ for the sake of his body, which is the church. What's lacking? You, right? What's lacking? Me. We are lacking. We don't allow that experience to truly be the experience it is intended to be. We don't allow that the fullness of redemption to come into every part of pain, right? Because that's part of this. Every piece of pain is part of this, to the point that we can be redeemed. And even our suffering can be redemptive. Now that's why ideally we invite ourselves into an experience of Lent that looks like something a little more painful, right? We accept this pain. We welcome the pain into this experience. That says, you know what? We're going to be a little bit more deliberate about denial, self-denial. We're going to be a little bit more deliberate about self, sacrifice, struggle. We're going to allow these pieces and parts to come into our daily routines to help us
get a little bit more focused on, are we being redemptive and are we being redeemed? And I think that that's the both and. Because every piece of pain is useful. Every challenge that turns our hearts into angst, that turns our hearts into to fear, that turns our hearts into anxiety and retaliation, anger, frustration, sadness, despair. All of these are useful if we allow them to be. And if we say, Lord, this is your pain. This is your pain that I'm going to ask you to redeem for me. Redeem this and let it be redemptive for others. That's when we begin to get into an amazing mode of experience that allows something unbelievable to occur in our lives. Because even the toughest of the tough, even those things that we don't invite through a time of Lent, which we invite a little bit of extra challenge, even those things that come our way because they come our way, and they always will. Father Stan Fortuna, fun Franciscan priest, rapper, bass player, has the song, Everybody Gonna Suffer. Right? Richard Poy, you're gonna suffer. That's what's gonna happen. It's what we do with that suffering that matters. And I would contend, and I'm not a priest, I'm not a pastor, I'm an evangelist, yes, I'm not a theologian, but I would contend that that is one of the most important elements in all that we do is what we do with pain, right? What do we do with pain? Do we fight it? Do we resist it? Does it make us angry? Does it drive us further away? Do we say, because of what I'm experiencing now, I can't do this? I mean, really? I mean, I think these are very real questions that we should ask ourselves when we're in these situations, because it's always that fight, flight, or freeze. We're going to be in one of those three. And I used to think it was either fight or flight. No, I do believe it's fight, flight, or freeze. I think it's fight, freeze, or fly, right? Either we freeze, we don't know what to do, we run the heck away, or we just retaliate with all of our might. Only the fourth way is the only way, where none of those are the option anymore, and we simply say, I'm going to allow this experience. I'm going to allow it. I'm going to embrace this experience. There's something redemptive for me, and there's something redemptive for others if this is given to grace. It's pretty cool. That's all we have time for this afternoon. Thank you for listening. I'm Leo Brown. Leo Brown, Almost Hour.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.